And one other thing, pretend that it's July, because this is coming out at the end of July. I'm going to do a little mini solo podcast for June since I ran out of time. It'll just be like kind of direct to the listeners, but this is the July podcast. So.
All right.
Here we go. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Cinema Faith podcast for July 2024. I am your host, Jonathan Buchanan, and I am joined once again by everyone's favorite hitman, Mr. Tim Nelson. How's it going, Tim?
Hey, I'm Tim Nelson. I'm everyone's favorite hitman. Great. Do you think that will hold up in a court of law?
No, absolutely not. It is recorded, though, so you never know.
Then I can tell the truth then, finally. Yes, I am a hitman. It's my spare time.
I just
it's more
think
a hobby.
It was so fascinating. Like, it would be someone like you. It's like the person you would never expect. That's what's fun about it.
The jolly sociopath.
Yeah, the jolly sociopath.
I'm the jolly sociopath. Hey, John, let's go hang out. Yeah,
like pastor, chaplain dude, and then, you know, maybe you kill some people because they deserved it. You know, you have a code. Yeah. Everyone has a code.
Well, I need to get so getting paid is part of being a hitman versus just being a serial killer.
Yeah, that's true. You're not Dexter.
Right. You could be both, I guess.
Yes. Yeah.
Thank you, John.
Yep. So how's it going, Tim? Change of subject. You having a good summer?
I was doing okay until all this serial killer talk.
I know. It's dark. Sorry.
So I'm having a great summer.
Good.
It was just, I had to work on the 4th of July this year.
Oh, that's awful. Yuck.
I know. It wasn't so bad. You know, mm-hmm. Could be worse.
Is it nice having the kids around, or are you ready for that free daycare again?
Well, actually, we shipped off a couple of them to Nana's house, so that worked out pretty good.
Oh, nice. Great.
How about you? What's it been like?
It's been good. It's been relaxing. I don't know. Like, because we're going through a move at my work, so I've been home all the time. I don't even have to go in the office for this temporary period. And so with the kids home and stuff, it's just been sort of a nice, you know, feels like family's around all the time. So I like it. It's good.
That's good, man. That sounds excellent. What did you do for the 4th?
The 4th, yeah. So we actually did nothing, but we're going on vacation soon. So we're going to do a little family vacay. So, yeah, it's coming.
No fireworks?
No fireworks. No. we missed them this year. Doggone it.
Are you serious?
Just didn't happen. I know.
What's it like there right now? What's the temperature there?
It's so hot, you know, just the middle of July. Just, terrible.
I know. It's a scorcher, isn't it?
Yeah. Scorcher. All right, Tim. So I hope that you've had the summer to catch up on your watch list because, of course, it is time for What Have We Been Watching? Are you still watching Dissecting Corpses? Come on.
No. not intentionally, no. Uh-huh. No, I've moved on to other things now.
Okay. Which,
but my daughter hasn't, so now we now own Ace Ventura.
Oh, you're still on the Jim Carrey kick.
Well, I'm not on it. My youngest is still on it. And she's been saying alrighty then everywhere. It's like being back in the 90s with kids saying alrighty then.
Right.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
Well, it was popular for a reason.
Yeah. So no, I've been watching. What have I been watching? I've been watching stuff to help me fall asleep. I don't know if you. I got to imagine everybody here does that. Like where you put on a show you're not that interested in.
Yeah,
and fall asleep. There should be a whole podcast called "Shows to Sleep To."
I've seen people say that. Like I've seen memes too. Like it's like what show Netflix recommend a show where I can just tune out on my phone, but it's relatively interesting enough where I can still tune back and be like, oh okay, you know,
okay,
that'd be great.
There's a show on Amazon. This is good, listeners, if you're struggling to sleep because so much extended amount of light during the summer here. It's so hot. Maybe fireworks have been going off. What you can do is there's a show on Netflix, and I think it's called like Ancient Marvels or something. But here's the key. It's narrated by the late, great Leonard Nimoy, Spock of Star Trek.
Oh.
And his voice is like, there's nothing like it. Makes Ben Stein look weak as far as... Yeah, if you're suffering from narcolepsy. Uh-huh. So I think there's two seasons of it, but you got to get the ones that Nimoy narrates because he doesn't narrate every season.
That's the key. Yeah.
There's ones. Yeah. So you put that on and the best part is like it'll kick over to the next episode, but it's still just Leonard Nimoy. And it's that's what I've been watching. Kind of.
Wow, that's your sleeping pill. I love it. Yeah, I never thought of that. You know, there was also that David Attenborough guy with the Blue Planet or whatever. He has a very soothing voice. He's like, the antelope grazes in the field. That would be a really good sleeping tool. Yeah.
See, these are all things. You just got to not care too much about it.
Right.
So if you like deeply care about the seven ancient wonders of the world, then this isn't going to work for you, because then you'll get engaged. And then it's not. So these are shows to sleep to. They're not bad shows. They're just perfect for sleeping. So there's bad shows and there's sleepy shows.
That's true. I will say reality television might fit the sleepy show bill or tune out on your phone bill. I feel a little ashamed, but I did watch some Married at First Sight. And that is a show that you can just sort of like, you know, just have on in the background, and you miss an hour. And you didn't miss that much. It's fine. Like, they're still just fighting and, you know, doing
it's like
their thing.
Pork rinds for your soul.
Exactly.
Not so great. Not so,
it's not good for you. Yeah, yeah.
It's like taking a spoon to the a bucket of lard and just go for it, man.
Nice.
You just do it. That's some terrible programming there, John.
Oh, I know.
I can't excuse it for any reason.
I'm ashamed. It's fine.
Yeah.
There's no justification for it.
Let's be honest. Yeah. So, these are terrible shows. I also have been watching the new, there's a documentary on like Hitler on trial or something.
Oh yeah. Always fascinating.
It is fascinating because it talks about his quote leadership style.
Oh, what was it?
Like, I was like,
psychopath.
Murder.
Uh-huh.
No, it's always, this Hitler fascination. Some people are so fascinated by this guy. No, they said it was lazy. Like, he didn't like to actually do it. He liked to wake up late, and he liked to make other people compete for his love, which thought was like, ugh.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's basically, he has no empathy.
But that's even more fascinating, because he's this guy who has total power. He can just wake up and shoot someone in the head. You know, no one's going to do anything. You can't do anything about it. And so the fact that he was a lazy, awful leader, and they still have to pretend like he's the greatest, that is so fascinating to me.
It's pretty weird. Anyway, it talks about how he could rise, and they do all this like Trump comparison, so it's not exactly like, it's not scholarly, but it's interesting, and it does have a lot of original footage. So I think that's a interesting show to watch if you want to watch it. And then the other, I've been really documentary kicking lately, and the other one that I watched that's streaming is the Stax record documentary, and I can't remember the name of it, but look up Stax, STAXX, I think. It looks at the Memphis recording industry, where you get all these famous recording artists come out of here. It's black owned. It's really cool. That was definitely worth my time. So if you're into like soul music, if you're into late 60s, early 70s, like just good music, it's worth your time.
Nice. Perfect. Those are good recommendations. All right. Well, I've been on two shows. So the first one is Manhunt. This is about the search for Abraham Lincoln's killer. So it has to do with his assassination. I'm normally not a history guy. I don't love it. Usually, especially if it's written, because it just tends to be written in the driest possible way. But if I can
sleeping.
Get a good, yeah, exactly. If
it's
I can
good
get a good
sleeping.
Engaging show that teaches me something about history, it's a win-win, and I really like it. And I did learn a lot in this show. Do you know who Edwin Stanton is? Are you familiar with this dude?
It sounds really familiar.
Well, he's a hero. He was Lincoln's war secretary, and he was kind of like his right-hand man during the Civil War, and then also the Reconstruction. And so Lincoln dies, like, unexpectedly, obviously, and it's up to Stanton to carry on, like, what they started, because there was such a push afterwards to just go back to the way it was. You know, Andrew Johnson was the next president, and according to the show and relative consensus, he was a bit of a scumbag, and he was very sympathetic to the Confederate cause, and if he had had his way, he very well might have reinstituted slavery, and nothing would have, like, actually changed. And Stanton was the dude who made it, who he hunted down Booth. And then this is the best part. This isn't technically a spoiler, because this is history, guys. This is history. This is true. Johnson was trying to replace him with a new war secretary so that he could basically, you know, reinstitute all the bad stuff. And Stanton barricaded himself in his office for 3 months. No one could get in, and then he couldn't be replaced. And during that time, they passed like some of the most pivotal amendments that actually enshrined it all of Abraham Lincoln's legacy into law. So fascinating stuff. And I just think it's great because you don't hear about this guy a lot. You hear about all the big names, but there are a lot of like smaller names that really are responsible for how things are to this day. And it's also fascinating to me that like you can have a conviction in the face of no one else around you having it. You know, like it was a very unpopular opinion that black people should be equal. But for whatever reason, there was just a handful of people, probably more than that. But, you know, like there was a group of people that believed it in their heart, even though no one else did. And they changed history because of it. I think that's really cool.
Wow.
Yeah. Now the show, it's not the best thing I've ever seen in my life. I would give it a B. The acting's good and stuff, but like it's a little bit overly serious and like, okay, we get it. But if you're in, want to learn a few things and just, and it is really, they pay really good attention to detail on the production design. So you feel like you're there. And so if you want to relive a little history, watch Manhunt. That is on Apple TV Plus. Secondly, I've been watching Baby Reindeer. Everyone's been talking about Baby Reindeer. I don't know if you've heard of it.
I can't get past the first scene in that movie. It just is too eerie.
It's on Netflix. Yeah, it's a dark show. There's no question it's a dark show. My wife would be out instantly. It's just, it's a lot, and it gets darker as it goes. So don't watch it if you don't mind dark material. But what I liked about it is that the gender role reversal was actually, I think, really profound. Like, this guy is stalked by this woman. There's also some other things that don't normally happen to men that happen. And so what it does, I think, is that it really like gives you a little bit of wake up call as a male viewer, because you're like, oh, that would be so awful to be stalked. Oh, that would be so, you know, and you're like, yeah, this is what women go through. It is creepy. It's not fun. Like, and so it's just, yeah, it was nice.
Is it like the cable guy?
I still haven't seen it. You know, it's on my list, and because you strongly recommended it and I still haven't seen it. I'm going to watch the cable guy. I can't wait to talk to you about that, but maybe, I don't know yet. Yeah.
Sorry. It's, you know, recommended viewing for my youngest child.
I know.
The cable guy stalks Matthew Broderick.
Okay. So it could be like that. Yeah.
He just shows up at weird times. He's like right outside the door all the time. Is this kind of like Baby Reindeer?
Mm-hmm. Stalking is scary. It's just like someone all up in your business. And then, yeah. So it's good. I do think that it's a lot stronger at the start, and it kind of, the quality lessens a little bit as it goes on. But I would give it a B+. But if you don't mind the dark and you want your eyes opened, especially the male viewers out there, I would recommend it. So there you go. Manhunt and Baby Reindeer.
Baby Reindeer.
That's what I've been watching.
All right, I'll try to give it another shot. It is terrifying to me, honestly.
It is. Yeah, I know. All right. Well, in case you don't know, listeners, we are here to talk about a movie, and that movie is Hitman, starring Glenn Powell, directed by Mr. Richard Linklater. Now, normally, this is where we would talk about our theater experience, but what a treat, Tim. We didn't have to go to the theater for this one. It was right in our homes.
Yeah. I baked a cake, like I said, I would always do during the movie.
Did you really bake a cake?
Caught a little bit of the dialogue. It was a 4th of July cake.
Oh, yeah, of course. For the festivities with the fireworks. Yeah.
Little bit. I put strawberries on one side to be like stripes, you know, across, and then blueberries.
Very patriotic, Tim. Wow.
It was blueberries and then a white background.
Go America.
A lot of piping on it, you know? I was, normally would do cream cheese frosting, but I was afraid it was going to melt at the picnic.
Gotcha. So, yeah, how was it? Well, you watched it on Netflix. Did you, said you might watch it with your kid. Did you end up watching it with Perry?
I did end up asking him to watch it with me. And then he said, nah.
Yeah, I didn't either this time. So you was a solo viewing Netflix experience.
It was me, and that was it.
Yeah, I'm with you. It was the same thing. Just sort of press play.
It was me on a couch, you know, super hot. The kids came back from the pool in July. It was super hot outside, but it was nice and cool and air conditioned. And I watched this movie, and I didn't, I think I had a candy bar.
You had a candy bar.
Because you got to have like, you got to have treats. This is an exciting movie.
Well, this is the thing, is that the biggest enemy to watching a movie at home, I'm torn because I love the theater experience. You know I do. Like, I want to go to a movie with strangers. I want the community aspect. But I also love the convenience of watching it at home, being able to pause it. But the biggest enemy to watching a movie at home is sleep. Because, I usually am the same way, where I'm going to pile up the food, I'm going to get a little dessert going on, and then you get to about halfway, and you're like, oh no. The blanket's very cozy. I don't know if I can continue. And so I almost, there were a couple times where my eyes started to close, but to the movie's credit, it kept me going. And by the end, I was like sitting up, like wondering how this whole thing was going to wrap up. So it does keep you engaged. Did you feel the same?
I felt the same way. I felt very engaged. I did have my candy bar. But yeah, you're right. And you got to be careful. Don't ever go horizontal.
That's it.
You right. start then watching a movie horizontal, you're done. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's what I think. Have some ice water maybe with you. That's ice helpful. Water. But then, and with Netflix, you can pause, you know, so you're good to go.
I also hate the feeling of like waking up at 2 a.m. after accidentally falling asleep on the couch and then stumbling into the actual bed. I really don't like that.
No, it's yeah. Although it does give you that middle-aged pee opportunity. You're like, ah, wow. Yes. Hey, prostate. No, I don't like it either because it never feels like good sleep at the end of that.
Right.
Yeah. So anyway, we think there should be a code of ethics about watching Netflix films. So we get that, like, if you're going to watch Leonard Nimoy, if you're going to watch John's Weird Abraham Lincoln Show, there's ways to watch those that you don't have to take seriously. But there should be, and someone should develop, if it has not already been developed, a code of ethics about how to watch a streaming movie. Don't you think?
Absolutely.
What would you put in there?
Well, I think you should sit up. The horizontal thing, that's key. I mean, mm-hmm. you can't ban food, but maybe like just think about what you're eating. Like don't eat a whole apple pie like at the start of the movie. You're not going to make it. It's not going to happen.
Should there be a rule about bathroom breaks and people in the background?
Absolutely. I really struggle. So I was trying to show my kids, what was it? We were watching... Well, we're going through Mission Impossible right now. We're going through all the Mission Impossibles. We're at 3.
Yeah.
But what's so frustrating about it is that like sometimes, yeah, one kid during the moment where they're actually explaining what the heck is going on, one kid will just pop up. Oh, time for water. Time for, and I'm just like, this is so disrespectful. And then you're not going to have any idea what's going on. So I do think we need to control the pausing and the interruptions. Yeah.
So there should be a pause rule and it should be a hard, you know, real hard number. Like, yes. How many times can you pause before you have to start over?
Just start over. Just out of respect for the director and all. These people gave like a year of their life to this and you're just going to like just pause it 50 times? No. No.
I mean, people are pausing for just odd reasons now.
Yeah.
You're kind of like, oh, I got an eyelash in my eye. Or, you know, I would like another helping of popsicles. Whatever mm-hmm. it would be. I like saying helping of popsicles. It sounds so odd.
Yeah. And these directors are crying because you are not supposed to just go in and out of their world. You're supposed to stay in it for 2 hours. That's the point.
Yeah. So I think we need to come up with some kind of code. You know, you talked yep. about you're a person that has to have a code. There should be a streaming code that shows that you're seriously watching something. And we need to develop this.
I agree with you.
I'm feeling it. Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, that's smart. That's in place of our weird food that we normally eat at the theater.
All right. Sounds good. Mm-hmm. We're going to come up with a code and we're going to post it and everyone's going to follow it and we're going to change the world. We're going to change movie watching as we know it.
A man's got to have a code.
Got to have a code. But I think both are valuable. I think the theater of experience is valuable and the home experience is valuable, provided you do the home experience right. So we're going to fix it. Don't worry.
All right.
All right, time to break this movie down for those who haven't seen it. So hopefully most of you have, since I did give you a heads up in June that this was coming, and you all watched it, and now it's July.
You have no excuse. You've got no excuse.
In case you haven't picked up on the fact, it's not July. It is June.
What?
We are recording
it is July.
Tim, I'm not going to let this stand anymore because it has been so obvious. Like, why are they going on and on about that it's July?
I baked a 4th of July cake. It had blueberries and strawberries.
You spoiled it. We could have kept it subtle, but you ruined it. Look, we had to record a little early this year.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I know. We had to record a little early. It's June and not July. But listen, just go with us. Okay. So we did warn you in June, or I'm going to warn you, and I hope you all... The cat's out of the bag. We're so unprofessional. Gosh.
There's a multiverse going on, maybe.
I know.
Could we just explain it that way, but not do a good job like Marvel?
Yes. Which is what okay. Marvel has totally become. I read an article, by the way. Marvel was like, we should have and shouldn't have done the TV shows. That was a huge mistake. We need to tell everyone you don't have to watch all the TV shows. They're literally, that's coming from the top. It's like, yeah, that's where it got really messed up for everyone. Like, we can't keep up anymore. Anyway.
Now it's like an awful obligation.
Yeah.
Like poor guys like Dan, he's like obligated to watch all these films because he has to understand the Marvel universe.
All the dimensions, all the universes, yeah.
So you guys like me who like don't care, I like gave up a long time ago and have no obligation. You
That's
know?
Good. That's a better life, I think.
I lack a moral compass when it comes to these movies.
Yes. So anyway, hopefully you watched the movie, but for those who haven't yet, Hitman. So, Tim, are you going to explain this or should I? It's up to you.
So... I'll explain it to you.
All right.
There is this really boring psychology / philosophy teacher who drives a Honda Civic. He's got lots of cats. He's super boring, like super boring. I don't know how to describe how boring this man is, which I will point out that John has a Honda Civic, I think, right? No, you have an Accord. It's different.
It's different.
Okay. So, and I actually like your car. But anyway, he's like super boring, super conservative as far as like he doesn't do anything risky. And one day there is a need for him to pose as a hitman with local police because he's tech savvy. So he's been helping do recordings and stuff like that. And their normal fake hitman that would entrap people into, you know, basically confessing that they're trying to get a hitman to kill their loved one. He was suspended because he did some bad stuff. And so he couldn't do it. So they said, well, what about you? So he tries it and he finds out he is really, really good at playing a hitman. He gets so into it that he starts researching the people that he's targeting to convict and becomes all these different hitmen, the hitmen that they need. Yep. One of the premises of the film is there is no such thing as a hitman.
Right. It's all made up.
It's all made up. Like people think that there's one. And so therefore, they're willing to risk everything in order to have the person that they want to have killed, killed. And so they're willing to believe that there is a hitman.
That's right. And it's a true story. Gary Johnson is his name. Now, partially true, because the first half of the film that Tim just explained is actually true. But then it goes off into a different direction that didn't actually happen. So one of his hitman personas is Ron. Very cool guy, suave, you know, handsome, just like you know, everyone loves Ron. Even all the, it was so funny, the police were like, I love Ron. I would totally go out with Ron because he's nothing like Gary, but it's still Gary. So anyway, Ron meets a woman and it changes everything. And a romantic plot ensues. And then Ron and Gary have some struggles because Gary's life starts colliding with Ron's life. And there you go. That is the plot of Hitman. And I won't give any more away, but we will eventually. Don't worry. Spoilers are coming, but not yet.
Yeah. Anyway, it's pretty interesting. I haven't seen a plot like this, I don't think.
No. Very original.
It's kind of new. I mean, I'm sure there's something like it out there, but it's not been redone and redone and redone until we're miserable.
Exactly. Yeah.
So it's kind of fun.
It's a fun movie. It just is. Mm-hmm. It's a great summer movie. This is a smart summer movie, and I'm glad we're talking about it.
Yeah. And on the tail end of the summer here, post 4th of July, guys.
Stop it. Stop. We already told them. It's just, and it's your fault. We could have gotten away with it.
I don't know why you're so trying to confuse them, John. July is a beautiful month. It's my birthday, happened a few days ago. It was so great.
All right. Let's talk about acting. Glenn Powell is the star of this. And so, Tim, be honest. Going into this movie, what was your experience with Glenn Powell? Did you even recognize him when he popped on the screen?
No.
So here's where we should have remembered him from. He was in Top Gun Maverick. He was like the new Val Kilmer, like arrogant villain guy, you know, just like the annoying, you know, blah, I'm so great. And then Tom
Cruise grumpy and he has good facial structure.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. No, I know. And that's the thing is I think he's a victim of his own look. So I read an article in the Times about him as a profile. And it was so funny because the reporter openly admitted to having like lunch with this guy and thinking that, oh, here we go. Just another Hollywood hunk sitting down. It's going to be so full of himself. And he was totally blown away by how he is not what he looks like at all. This guy did grow up acting, but he is smart. Like he actually like understands the business intimately from the inside and want, and here's the different thing about him. Most actors, if you ask them like why they pick the roles, they would be like, it's all about the art. I don't care if it makes money. I just want to do the art. Glenn Powell cares if the movie makes money. He cares about the business side of Hollywood. He spent years working as a script, you know, one of those people that read scripts for studios and stuff. He actually consultant, right. He understands which scripts are successful, which aren't, what's going to work, what's not going to work. And he's like, we're in this business to make money. That and then if we do, we get to make more movies. And that's Glenn Powell. He's a smart guy. And by the way, he co-wrote this movie with Richard Linklater. So this is not just your typical, you know, Hollywood hunk dude who's just going to like coast on his looks. The guy's smart and he knows the biz.
He's like us. He's the total package. It's not just his hunky looks. He's also incredibly intelligent.
Very
insightful.
Just like us. That's a good point,
He
Tim.
Can take
Thank
apart
you.
A script. He can evaluate a film. They're just, I feel like he could come in, we could have him on the podcast.
This is what
maybe.
We tell our wives all the time. I'm more than my looks. Like, come on.
No, I say I'm everything. I'm the total package. I don't know how you restrain yourself.
Yeah.
Because this is the total package.
We have the total package. Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So Glenn Powell, he's been acting since he was 14. He started out in Spy Kids 3. He's been doing this a long time. He has 50 credits to his name. 50.
And we don't really
know. We don't know who he is. That's what I'm saying. But I really think this could be his breakout moment. Like, I hope it is. Because what I was struck with, and I want to get your take on it, but what I was struck with is he's already seemed like a star. He already seemed like he's been doing this a long time and we're already in love with him. Like, he just had that confidence and he just owned this movie. What did you think? Do you agree with that or not?
Yeah, he's lovable.
Mm-hmm.
He does funny well, too. But yeah, definitely. Yes. I felt like some of these actors that makes you feel like, oh, I know a guy like this, or I know this guy. Like, I think Chris Pratt is like that, but not. I feel like he's pulling it off in a more like action hero-y way than Chris Pratt could. Not action hero, but like he is like a leading man more than Chris Pratt in some ways.
Yeah, like if you're thinking of Chris Pratt and Guardians of the Galaxy, like there's similarities to kind of the vibe, but I feel like Glenn might be more. I almost want to say less boyish, less immature. Like he's more convincing.
That's what I mean. That's a better insight. I agree with that. Is that he has more command almost. I don't know how to explain that, but like, mm-hmm. and you get a sense that like his characters have some depth. What I'm thinking is that he could have played in Guardians. He could have been Chris Pratt's character, I think.
But I don't think Chris Pratt could have played this character. That's the point. Yeah.
There's absolutely no way. Yeah.
Yeah. So I thought he was great. And like, I hope that this opens doors for him because I think he is a really good actor and he's got the star quality and I think he could go far if he keeps getting roles. So his next big movie is next month. It's Twisters. Now, I had no interest in that. That's, of course, the sequel to 1996's Twister. And which I did see in the theater. Front row, I remember at my favorite theater. Anyway, I have no interest in the sequel, but maybe I do now because I trust Glenn Powell that he's going to choose the right scripts and he's going to choose projects that are good. So maybe it's going to be a hidden gem. I don't know.
It's possible he's just picking a movie that makes money.
I know.
That's
the downside. That's the downside. Is that
it's possible
because
he's business savvy from somebody I talked to recently. So yeah, is that a Bruckheimer film?
I don't know.
It's got to be.
Is he still making movies? Jerry Bruckheimer.
No, he's producing them. I don't think he's making
producing.
Them.
No, I know, producing.
He's putting money toward them.
Uh-huh. So we agree that he was great. Good as
the
character.
I think he was great. Great character. He was fun. Yeah. He played a bunch of different characters. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's what was fun about it. He could like take on different personas.
Yeah, and he's got a good jawline, and he does better hairy than clean shaven.
You like the cut of his jib?
Yeah, right. It's like a Brad Pitt. He's got a Brad Pitt way, but he's also a geek.
Yeah. Yeah.
He can do all that. And it's kind of a nice, I think he's a man of our times.
Yeah. He can be both Gary and Ron. You know, he can be a nerd and a hunk.
A philosophy professor and a hired killer.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about Glenn Powell's co-star in this, Adria Arjona as Madison or Maddie. Now, she's been in a bunch of movies before this too, but I did not recognize her from anything. But I thought, I was like, who is this? Because she was a great actress and she had great chemistry with Glenn Powell, like really good chemistry with him. Like I thought they played off each other so well and they were very commanding leads. What'd you think of her?
Fine. I didn't have like a, I don't know how, there's part, her character is a little bit weird. And so I don't know how I responded to her.
I dug it. You didn't seem that impressed by it. I thought it was great. Thought she was fun.
Yeah.
She was quirky and like sexy and like it was the whole package. I don't know.
Yeah.
Murderous. Spoiler alert.
Sorry. She's murderous. Anyway, no, she's okay. I don't know. She's all right. I think I like her in some scenes. Yeah.
A ringing endorsement.
Yeah. Well, I like her in some scenes where she does a good job like doing the eye contact without talking thing.
Yeah.
And you've got a lot of scenes that are like that in this. So, and one in particular, but that's what I would say. Yeah. So she's good. I don't think she was like absolutely necessary to this film. I think there could have been a different actress, but I think Glenn Powell was.
All right. She was, her biggest break before this was Andor, which is actually a good Star Wars spinoff show on Disney Plus, and she was in all the episodes of that. So hopefully this also will give her a good career boost, and we'll see. But I think we got two future stars here, and this could be their breakthrough movie. This is the number one movie on Netflix, Tim, and everyone's talking about it. This could do it for them. But hey, you were not impressed by her, and maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. Maybe.
I thought she's all right.
She's all right.
I don't think she did anything wrong. I think she's fine. Yeah. I was more impressed with him.
Sure. All right. Well, let's talk about the man of the hour here, Richard Linklater. But again, a reminder that Richard Linklater is a writer-director, but he co-wrote this one with Glenn Powell. So you got to give him some credit there, because I think this is a really good script. I think it's clever and fun and has lots of really good twists and turns. I remember, like, this is bad, but like, this is part of watching at home. I was like on the edge of my seat at the end when they were like, when he gets to that, everything is colliding into that final scene. And I'm like, oh my gosh, how is this going to wrap up? And then I looked and it was only like 16 minutes left. And I was like, what? They're doing it. Like, this is going to be interesting all the way to the end. And that's this movie. It's a good script.
Yeah, definitely.
So Richard Linklater, we've talked about him. Our last podcast with Linklater was Everybody Wants Some in 2015. It's been a minute.
Great film. Great film.
Yeah, it was. We both liked it. That's all I remember about that movie, is that we both liked it. You know, Glenn Powell was in that. Just saying.
That's right. I read that. Yeah.
So if you want like a blow-by-blow filmography of Linklater, go listen to Everybody Wants Some, because we did do that then. But the basic summary of it is, Linklater is obsessed with time. He loves lots of dialogue in his movies, lots of talking. And so he kind of started out like that with Slacker and Dazed and Confused, Before Sunrise Trilogy, some of my favorite films ever, which is basically just two people talking for an hour and a half, which sounds awful, but it's fantastic. So he loves playing with those. Oh, and then Boyhood, of course, the ultimate time movie. That was a huge experience. He followed a kid and like it just kept filming on and off as the kid grew up with Ethan Hawke and everything. So he loves those themes of time and growing and just the interactions between two people and Texas. Yep.
He loves Texas, this man. He's from Austin, I think.
But what we often maybe forget is that he can make a classic Hollywood movie. Like Richard Linklater directed School of Rock with Jack Black. So like the dude knows how to hit all the formulaic notes. Not formulaic, I don't mean that in a bad way, but he knows how to make a movie that is very popular, that all the studios are like, yay, this works for everybody. He knows how to do it.
What's interesting is there's some theme overlap with School of Rock, actually.
Oh, okay. Tell me. This is great. Excited. Because I just saw School of Rock a week ago. I just saw it for the first time. Not a week ago. It was about 4 months ago. Someone begged me to see it because I'd never seen it. Yeah. What is the theme overlap?
So it's like you're living a meaningless existence. And then there's this opportunity to become something more than you are. And then you impersonate that more than you are thing. And then you become that thing.
You're right. Jack Black's character is very similar to this. That to Glenn Powell is what he's doing here. That's good. Yeah.
It fits all the philosophical stuff that Linklater's so into.
Yeah, nice. And that leads us to Hitman, because it is a much more traditional Hollywood movie like School of Rock, where there's a broad appeal. You know, it's not just the two people talking thing that he loves doing. So it's an entertaining, appealing movie. And I don't know. What are your thoughts, Tim, on Linklater in general, and what do you think he brings to this film?
I think he's super philosophical, and so like we've often like compared him to the difference between him and a couple other philosophical people would be Werner Herzog's films, and then Terrence Malick. Sure. It's like super like where he makes a movie that's entertaining and easy to watch. The other two do not, but his movies are super philosophical. In fact, you get philosophical monologues from the main character.
That's right. Because he teaches a psychology class. And so we get these asides, which totally buffer the main plot. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think he's obsessed with identity. He's obsessed with existentialism. So like the idea of, does essence precede existence, or does existence precede essence? So do you become things, or are you already something and you're living into that thing? So I think he's kind of obsessed with those things. He loves structures that we've created for meaning. So like graduation, like Dazed and Confused, or going from junior high to senior high. And there's a ritual that goes with that. And if you don't pass through that ritual, then you don't become who you're supposed to become. So he's into all these like constructs that we make in order to create identity. which I think is kind of so super philosophical.
Yeah.
And so we see that in this film. We see that in School of Rock. We see that in Boyhood. We see it all over the place. And so I feel like he's obsessed with philosophy.
Yeah. I mean, that's the Before Sunrise Trilogy is basically just two people talking about philosophical concepts. I mean, that's really what the dialogue is centered on. And it's it's wonderful. But yeah, I agree with you. I think he's an underrated director. I really do. Because like his name doesn't pop up when we're talking, when we just start listing off some of the greatest directors working today. You know, we'll mention Spielberg and Scorsese and Paul Thomas Anderson or Iñárritu or something. But like, I just, we don't think initially of Linklater, but the dude has made a bunch of classics. And he's a great director.
Yeah, I like his stuff. I think it is, he doesn't get outside of his areas. So I think this is my opinion. He likes actual character development. I mean, that's kind of like, of course, because people are trying to become something else. That's part of character development, become different people than they are. So that's really satisfying. I don't see Indiana Jones ever, you know, isn't going to do that.
Right.
You know, Indiana Jones is Indiana Jones. That's what he is. And so he's doing character development and philosophy. And I don't see Linklater films as being these like big budget, blow your mind. They're more conceptual. Like, we want to talk about this philosophy and we're going to like sneak it in. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. It's kind of like what we hang everything else on. I don't see necessarily a Spielberg film being that way.
Sure. But like he has these tendencies, like these themes that he's obsessed with, but I don't think he gets stuck in the same way that like a Wes Anderson with his style or Malick with like just so can be so pretentious. Like I feel like he has his themes that he's always going to explore in his movies, but his movies are different enough where and they're still plot driven or character driven in some cases. But I mean, like it still feel like just, you know, different movies, like very varied career, but with the same themes coming up again and again.
Yeah. And he can put it in a variety of styles, a variety of storylines.
Mm-hmm. And it works. Like, you know, you take a movie like this that maybe could have been directed by a standard Hollywood director and just be some mainstream schlock, but his cleverness, you see it, how it plays out, especially in the way the characters talk to each other. Like that one pivotal scene in the movie, which I thought was so great. Like, it's just the way their dialogue, you know, and you see this in Before Sunrise all the time. It's like, and they even, the characters even say it. It's like the only magic that happens is the space that's created between two people sharing ideas. I think that's paraphrasing what those two characters say at some point. But like that, you see that in this movie, you see it in all of his movies.
Yeah. I like his stuff. Like I'm quite partial to it. So it's, and I think maybe because, you know, it's a old white guy. So like, I'm nice. Like, who is interested in philosophy and the way human beings make meaning.
Mm-hmm.
So exactly. And he has like he has a very definite perspective and he's saying, this is how it is. It isn't this other way. And that's interesting to me because he's not like, we are this. So we are in the image of God. We are have original sin or any of this stuff. He's like, no, you're going to just become, you have to figure out who you want to become and then start faking that you're that thing.
Well, let's talk about that. Let's talk about that because I want to get into the themes. Yeah. And I also, because I don't, okay. So I'm going to kill two birds with one stone. I'm going to tell you what the main thing I struggled with in this movie, because I don't think it's perfect. And then that's going to get into the themes. So
okay,
this is going to start getting into the heavy spoiler territory, by the way. So if you're really that guy, you know, now's the time. Here's the thing. One of the main themes of the movie that I want to explore more with you, which you kind of alluded to just now, is this idea that who we are is sort of a construct. It's a story we're telling ourselves, right? I'm telling myself the story every day that I'm John Buchan and I love movies and you're Tim Nelson and you love fishing and we're all just making up this story about ourselves. Mm-hmm. And that story can change at any time. And according to the kind of the major theme of this film. And so Gary Johnson can become Ron, and he does. And we see how he becomes Ron. We see this confidence that Gary didn't have, this basically the opposite of everything Gary is. And and when he becomes Ron, he gets the girl that he could never get as Gary. And the more he leans into that, the more he becomes Ron. And then what ends up happening is, as you alluded to, the woman is murderous. She does murder her husband. Now, We go along with that because that guy's bad. Like, he's really bad dude, right? Like, he's abusive and controlling and, like, you know, I mean, obviously, I'm a pacifist, but, like, by the Hollywood morality logic, you know, you present a really bad guy and then he gets what's coming to him and we're all like, yay.
We have empathy for the character, his wife.
Right.
He's demonstrated he's a real jerk.
Real bad guy. So she kills him and we're like, okay, so that's fine. But then what was really interesting to me and didn't really sit well with me was that end scene. So you have this amazing scene where the jig is up. The girl knows that he's really Gary, but he still has to go back as a cop with everyone listening and be Ron. And it's the best scene in the movie. But what ends up happening that was so strange was that there's a sort of a bad cop named Jasper. But, like, okay, we know he's a jerk. We know that he maybe beat up some teenagers, but he's not, like, hurting people or not, like, killing people, you know. And so, but, like, so what happens is he finds out everything, this Jasper guy, and he's going to expose them, and they decide to kill him, and they do. And I thought it was so weird. They put a paper bag over his head, and he's basically dying in front of them while they literally flirt with each other, make out, and end up, it's alluding to, have sex right in front of his dying body. And that to me was kind of offensive because Jasper is not, like, worthy of death. He's not a great guy, but, like, he doesn't need to die. And they are so cavalier about it. And then they just cut to this, like, meet cute sort of, like, oh, everything worked out. Here we are with our kids. And how did you guys meet, mom and dad? And then it's like movie's over. And I just thought that was the tonal, how they breezed over this casual murder was so jarring to me. It didn't sit well. But then I wondered, well, is that the point? Is that what Linklater's trying to say? Is that he became Ron? He took on the morality of Ron. And is that okay? What did you think about all of that, Tim? Or did you have any problems with it, or were you just rolling with it?
I didn't have a problem with it. It made sense to me, which is he was pretending to be something for a long, long time. And in the act of, like, basically going through the motions every, like, day, you know, day in and day out as a fake hitman, he actually becomes a hitman.
Right.
And so, like, he actually kills. And in some ways, he does it for the money, too, right? Because he didn't have to kill me, he just had to pay him off.
That's right. So they're saving money, you're saying.
So basically, they only had to pay that guy off, but they decided, you know what? We didn't want to keep the money, so we're going to kill him. So he actually becomes a hitman, which I thought was kind of fun.
Yeah.
I mean, fun, not fun. Like the hitman's fun. Yeah, yeah, fun, like it was like kind of over the top and silly because it's a comedy. This
it's
is a comedy,
kind of a farce, which, right? That's what I was thinking as I was thinking back on it.
So he ends up killing this cop for money because the cop's like, I'm willing to blackmail you. And then we can all win. And they're like, nah, let's put a plastic bag over your head and drug you. And yeah, he ends up being the person that he's impersonating because he's been doing it long enough and he fully commits to it.
Right.
So, which is like kind of really, for me, it's like part of the existential idea, which is fully committing to something. And you get that in the beginning, like risk. So he gives this big lecture about you have to give it all. You've got to risk it all. And he's giving a philosophy lecture in the beginning of the film. And then they focus in on a student. And he's like, whatever, this guy drives a Honda Civic.
Oh, yeah. That's how it opens, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. That's a huge theme of the movie. And he even says it at one point in the psychology class. He's like, seize the identity you want for yourself. Whoever you want to be that person with passion and abandon. That's what he says.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and we see it.
And he talks about like previous philosophical schools like Descartes. He would fall in more with Nietzsche, Kierkegaard, Sartre, and the idea of like we're creating our own meaning, we're creating our own identity. But identity is really big.
What do you think about that? What do you think about that very postmodern idea that we're all just stories that we're telling ourselves and we can change it at any time and our morality can change with it? What do you think?
So it's interesting now because I think we're all playing a part with social media and that we have like two selves. So that in some ways, like you're, you know, whoever your online self, your Instagram self is the hitman in some ways. So yeah. You kind of become that thing, which I think is kind of weird.
That is interesting. Yeah. We're kind of have dual personalities to us, who we are online and who we are in real life, or we can, if we're not careful. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, who are we pretending to be? So I think that's interesting. I think philosophically, I think it's hard because I think the older Western tradition, the classic theism, would say we are a certain way because God has made us this way. Mm-hmm. And it's for human beings, it's universal, so that we, and whether you, depending on how, you don't have to go one way or another, like, are we good or are we bad? You could just pick one, and that would be like, no, God made us good or God made us bad. And that's who we are. And then we're called to kind of live into harmony with that thing.
We're created, and that's who we are. Yeah.
Yeah. So like, I am loved by God, but I don't necessarily act like I am. So then we live into that. And that makes a lot of sense to us, right? Oh, I want to get more in accord with who God has made me to be.
I certainly feel more comfortable with that than the idea that there is no morality and it's just sort of, you know, make it up however it feels best to you.
Right. Other folks would say, well, that's not really honest. Like, you do have choices and you can become to a certain degree something that you are. You can have change. Like, that's a big question in this movie is, sure, can I experience change or am I, you know, by my circumstances and by my how I was raised, all these things, you know, and how I developed, I can't really experience true change. And then this movie would say, no, you can experience change, even if it's like to become, go from like a stuffy professor to being a murder for hire guy.
And I think it's hard not to see the legitimacy of that. I mean, think about who you were 20 years ago and tell me that you are not a different person. I mean, some core elements of us will always remain. And they even admit that in the movie, that he finds the balance between Gary and Ron. But I think that we do change. It's inevitable if we're growing, if we're actually allowing life and all of its ups and downs and suffering and all this stuff to change us, it will change us and we become different people. So there's definitely validity to that.
But like, from a psychology standpoint, we can have some change, but most of the time, like, we get so heavily wired the first 5 years of life, mm-hmm, that we tend to, we're more similar to our 5-year-old self than, I mean, we can't, there's a consistency to us over time in that.
Well, but that's the argument, right? He has that mm-hmm argument with his ex in the movie. Like, and she claims that modern day research says that if you are committed to changing your personality, all of the different matrices of like what makes us introversion, extroversion, you can do it. You can actually change. You don't agree with that? You think we'd basically stay the same on our essence?
Yes. Yes. Okay. Unless we have a giant neural disruption. You see like massive personality change with head injury.
Yeah, sure. I don't know. I'm leaning more towards the movie's idea in that, like, I just notice how much I've changed and in my beliefs, in the things that I don't know. I think, but I agree with you to an extent that there is a core of us that is very similar to how we still were when we were kids. But yeah.
I think in our culture, it's like really comforting to think that we're the captain of our destiny. So, oh, I'm in charge of this whole ship. I make all these choices. And therefore, we sense that if we have the ability to change, then we have the ability to make choices. And then if we have the ability to make choices, then things can get better. Mm-hmm. Or I can be different. And that gives us like some kind of comfort because it feels like control. What I would say is, well, what if a lot of the essence of who we are is already predetermined? Does that give us less of a sense of control? Possibly, yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess I think that the idea, this existentialism, and I'm not trying to attack I don't have the ability to even attack the foundations of it. But the idea of that we are creating who we are is very appealing. There's responsibility and control. Mm-hmm. And I think we like those ideas.
And it doesn't necessarily mean, by the way, that it's a free-for-all when it comes to morality, because one of the laziest arguments that Christians often make against atheists, which I've made in my life, is, oh, well, if there's no God, if there's no objective truth, then, well, you just do whatever you want. You just kill people every day. You just rape people all the time. Well, it's just chaos. And then, like, but that's a dumb argument, and it's really lazy, because at the end of the day, our choices do have consequences, and just inherently, like, joy, you know, like, or just feeling joy, feeling peace, feeling contentment. Like, you cannot believe in God, but you still have the consequences of what you do. So I was listening to Will Smith, and he was talking, and someone asked him what his net worth was, and it was just such a bold question, but he was like, I don't even know anymore. And basically what I realized is that you know, once you've bought everything you've ever wanted to buy and done everything you've ever wanted to do, and it still doesn't make you happy, then you realize that it's something inside of you that has to change. And I thought that was really profound. But it's the idea that, like, yes, if there really is no objective truth, you could kill people. But, like, is that actually going to lead to a fulfilling life and make you happy? And is it going to be good for the people around you? And so it's not like you need some code imposed on you in order to understand that some things are not worth doing, is what I'm trying to say, you know? And I think that's why it's a lazy argument. Yeah.
I'm not even at the point of getting to that argument on this, because you could want to change any way you want. So you could change to be like a nun, right?
Sure.
I mean, within it. So, like, you could embody whatever you want to embody. So I don't necessarily connect the idea of, like, yeah, I think the big issue is, like, where do we get our identity? Mm-hmm. And I think that's where, I think it's not just binary. So do we create ourselves? Did God create us a certain way? Or is it a combination of the two? And so, like, as we're talking about it, like, how much can we change? I think how much can we change is, like, a huge question, because there's, I mean, I think about narcissists, hard time to change. Like, it's super hard to change. Clinically, very almost impossible.
Even with therapy, like, it's just they usually don't want to. Yeah.
There's a lot of categories like that. So how much can we actually change? Now, did God create us to be narcissists? No.
Right. Exactly.
We can't believe that. So it gets into some other stuff. But I think Linklater likes individualism, responsibility, and then seeing social structures as things that can be broken to achieve a greater kind of enlightenment almost. And it's done in love. So that's another thing to think about, which is the reason he does this and kind of breaks into pretending to be this hitman is he starts out and he's fine with the arrangement where he just goes and fakes being a hitman and everything's okay. And then he sees this woman and he's like in love with this woman.
Yeah.
So he changes his rules and he begins to push those more and actually pretend to be a hitman for a longer period of time. And in order to, like, get the girl,
right.
You know, but because he's falling in love. So that's interesting. I don't know. He's changing for love, even though he's changing to something that I would think, like, has less morality.
Do you think that there is, because it, I mean, I get what you're saying, that, like, we're both coming at it from two different angles. I think you're saying, like, this is ultimately about whether you can change, and I'm saying it more like, is there any objective truth, or is it just stories that we make up? Which I think is also what the movie's exploring. But are you worried at all for the younger generation that, like, have sort of abandoned God, and rightfully so, because, you know, the Christians screwed it all up and, like, presented the most toxic version of Christianity possible? I do feel like, by and large, and this is obviously painting in broad strokes, but there is a sense where the younger generation sort of are fed up with that concept. And I feel like there maybe is a lack of, like, purpose or direction that comes with thinking that you were created and that you are here for a reason and you're here to do, you know, please God and, like, you know, and I think that maybe is missing in the younger folks, and, like, it's hard to instill, like, purpose. I think that's the number one thing, is that, like, what is the point of all of this? I'm like, go to this job and then I come home and it's like, is that it? And I feel like leaning into something higher than us is healthy for us, but I feel like that has maybe been, we've thrown the baby out with the bathwater a little bit in our rightful pushing back against toxic religion. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that? I was curious.
I guess it's like, what image do we lean into in our trying to become? Right. So he leans into these hitman images that he has from film that are social constructs. Basically, he says, there is no such thing as a hitman these days. It doesn't really exist. So he leans into these ideas that he has about what a hitman is, and then eventually kind of becomes that. So I think there's, like, a positive spin, like more of a, I would say, Christian existentialism, where we look at Christ as the telos. So, like, Christ is our goal. We are responsible, but also have the ability to make choices to become more and more like that person.
Yes.
And that we can't fully embody that. We can do the best we can. And so if that becomes the telos and we're creating ourselves, I think that you can work that out and I can be like, okay, you know, that's great. I think the idea is that we'd have to accept that Christ is the reality, though,
mm-hmm.
because we're picking a structure. And I think we go, this is the thing we want to be. And this is the ultimate for us, just like a hitman or a football player or whatever, whatever we're picking to like put all of our passionate, creative life force into.
And maybe it's just as simple as like, whether we know it or not, everyone has a telos, right? Everyone has something that they're striving for. Like Dylan said, you got to serve somebody. So we are more comfortable with the Christ angle, but like we're all doing it. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I would say like, if you want to be a Christian existentialist, then you've got to pick a telos.
Right.
But everyone picks one.
Everyone picks so one like, without even knowing it.
Everyone's picking one, even like a, yeah. So everyone's picking one anyway. Mm-hmm. So you could be a Christian existentialist who picks Christ based on what, you know, the scriptures and, our, and the tradition and the church and all that stuff. You say, this is who I want to become. And I'm going to use all of my energy to try to become more like this. Mm-hmm. So you kind of live into that form, which is like, some people would argue that that's not, that's more like Aristotle. So it's more like virtue and you're living into like an idealized form. Yeah. I don't know. So that's one way to do it. I tend to be more of a God has made us a certain way as people and that we do have choices, but those choices are limited and we can't just, you know, become unicorns if we want to.
But maybe that's the problem. The younger generation has like realized that like there are no teloses worth living for because this Christ thing comes from these toxic, awful Christians. All our politicians have failed us. All our celebrities have sex scandals. There is no one and nothing to like strive for anymore. And then they just give up. I don't know. There might be something to that.
Yeah. So I don't know. Like, so what do we want to live into? But people have ideas of what they want to live into. So they have ideas of morality. They've got an idea of a person that they may admire. Mm-hmm. I mean, even like we look at Ruth Bader Ginsburg, right? I see her stuff everywhere throughout my job. Like people have Ginsburg stuff everywhere.
Yeah.
Powerful woman who advocates for women.
There you go.
You know, and who's intellectual and formidable. Yeah. So who do we want to become? So I see that all the time. The question is like, who is our Christ? Because I think if our Christ is too small, then we try to live into that, then it's not any good.
Yeah.
Being a Christ follower, a Jesus follower, we're trying to live into a bigger telos.
That's right.
And I think that maybe it's just that these are too small a telos that people have been presented with. So if God is just a judgmental jerk who wants to control your reproductive rights and build up armaments and like go to war, like that's not based on any historical Jesus that we know.
No.
And then B, it's like, it's just not a big enough vision. So it's not that it's the wrong vision. It's just not big enough. Like you're just like, oh, this is, I mean, I guess it's wrong to a certain degree, but it's like, yeah. Or even as we're being formed, looking at, oh, do we have too small a view of who God loves?
Yeah.
That's a hard question. I know I do, and I'm working on it. Does God really love everybody? Does God really have a plan for everybody? Interesting. But what I worry about is if we get so into this existential idea, then we're the main character and nobody else is.
Yeah.
That's what my kids are. That's a problem too. Because if we all have this common humanity and this common dignity, then we are willing to yield our choices. I guess that is a choice, yielding a choice. But we're willing to see that humanity in other people and yield. And I don't, like, rather than just get what we want.
Yeah, and not kill people by putting a bag over their head because it's easy.
Yeah. And even that's based on some kind of morality that they've chosen. I mean, it's like, this guy is a, quote, bad guy. So we're, like, already convinced that he's
right,
a bad
that
guy.
He's worth discarding, basically, which is too small of a vision.
Right.
That's what you're saying.
So, like, if he has the image of God on him, we can't put a bag on his head.
That's right.
Yeah. And for us, too, like, if we have the image of God on us, then we can't go killing people.
Yeah, we can't be hitmen, Tim, unfortunately. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Anyway, so I think it could be kind of confusing, but, like, my, for me, for sure, but my take on it is, like, I think that we have to have some kind of level of commonality in who we are as people and our identity before we begin. And I think we also probably have some ability to become. So I don't know if it's like one or the other. That might be too binary looking at it that way.
Well, I just think like, you know, I have a friend who's an atheist and we get into a lot of just spirited debates, but like while still in a spirit of love. And I just, for me, it's like strip away all the symbols, strip away all the labels, all that. We don't need to talk about the Trinity. I know it sounds ridiculous. Let's just say, you know, love other people and treat them as if they are like as yourself. Love other people as yourself and love God, whatever that looks like for you. Like love something beyond yourself. And that's it. That's it. That's what God said. That's what Jesus said. And I think that really covers all the bases. And if we do that, if we treat everyone with that grand vision that you're talking about, that they are worthy of love just as we are, then you can't kill them. And a lot of the problems are solved.
I do believe this part. I do think some of our notions of morality do come from our Judeo-Christian tradition, even if we would not identify within that tradition. Mm-hmm. And not all of it. I mean, there's just like, there's some biological response stuff where you're like, yeah, killing is not great for your herd, right?
Right.
But I also would say, like, I think there is, if we have a common idea of what love is, because love is such an amorphous concept. So I think we still need a telos. So we still need something to say, what does love look like? And I think we can define that. I don't think we can define that for someone else without becoming unloving.
Yeah. That's
we can go here. Right. But I think we can like go, here's what I found. Kind of like the beggar who found bread, you know, Oh, here's the bread. And I think we can say, look, here's what love looks like. And here's our telos. And here's what I found life in. And I'm not going to coerce you to it, but here it is.
Yeah.
And I think that's love. That's more to me like where it's at.
Beautiful. Beautiful. All right, Tim, what are your final thoughts on Hitman and your letter grade? Go for it.
Interesting, cool, fairly original plot, great acting, good twists, lots of scenes at diners and stuff, which I just love. And so I think it's pretty fantastic. Yeah.
So what's your letter grade?
I give it an A.
Okay. So I enjoyed this movie a lot. I thought it's funny, it's clever, and I love the chemistry. And I think that's a thing that Linklater needs to get credit for, is that he's really, really good at drawing genuine chemistry from his actors. Look at Julie Delpy and Ethan Hawke in the Before Sunrise trilogy. Look at all the characters and how they interact with each other in Dazed and Confused. And look at these two leads, like genuine chemistry. Yeah. And that is the director making that happen. So good job for Linklater with that. So yeah, I like this movie a lot. I thought it was really entertaining. Did struggle with that final scene, but I also recognize that it actually plays into the themes that they're talking about, and it is more of like a farcical comedy. So I'm going to land on an A minus. That is my grade. And so cool. A minus for me. That's where I'm landing.
I am so glad that you recommended this movie, because it was not on my radar at all.
I know.
My only thing I would say that I regret is that I didn't get to see it in the theater, to be honest.
Yeah. I don't know if it even played in the theater. I just know that it was like all the ads were like streaming on Netflix on June 6th or whatever it was. And so I don't even know if it had a theatrical run. It probably did, because I think you have to for eligibility for awards, which they'll probably try for a little bit at the end. But yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, there you go. All right. The movie is Hitman. It is playing on Netflix right now. You can go watch it right now, and you should, because we both recommend it. It's a journey worth taking for sure. So I haven't mentioned this in a while, but did you know that we have an email address, Tim?
What?
And that our listeners can reach out to us with their thoughts on the movie, thoughts on their podcast, thoughts on anything we discuss. And that email address is, are you ready?
Yes.
podcast@cinemafaith.com. Wow, that's simple. podcast@cinemafaith.com. Write us. We will read your responses on air. Not in all of it, but snippets. We promise. That's a promise. So if you want to write in and you want to hear some of what you're bringing to this conversation on the air, please write to us. We would love to hear from you. So yeah. And Tim, we'll be back in August with something. I don't know what, but there is a lot of exciting movies that I've been hearing about from the Cannes Film Festival and all the other film festivals, and they're slowly making their way to the Midwest. And once they're here, we're going to watch them and we're going to talk about them. So we'll find something.
Fantastic. I love it.
And enjoy the rest of July / June.
July.
July.
It's nice. July. We're Juliers.
You think you can just get through a podcast with a simple narrative that it's July, but Tim will roast you out.
It's true. It took a while, but John, he couldn't handle the pressure.
Couldn't handle it. I just can't.
But yeah, it's been a hot one.
It's
this
been
July.
A hot one. Enjoy the rest of your summer, Tim. Feeling all right.
Patriotic.
Thanks, man. I love you. Everyone else, keep the faith, my friends. We will see you next time.